with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside of the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, how we doing? We were just talking before the show started. We had football this week. Training camps are underway. We saw the NFL Network, ESPN, they had their back to football celebration. Everyone's off and running, and the pads are coming on at training camp.
Yeah, and everybody's great. I mean, have you read anything about a bad practice? No. I mean, the completion percentage on 7-on-7 is astronomical. Everybody's doing good. The ball doesn't touch the ground. We're going to the Super Bowl. It's great. Look, the best thing I've read is that last Thursday will be the last Thursday without football until we get to February. I mean, is there anything better than that? We can get on a good routine and – it's great. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I don't want to overreact to anything, Femi. I think we have to be very careful about what we're digesting in terms of the media report. I don't understand it, but, you know, people love to see that, you know, Jalen Hurts was 10 for 10 and 7-on-7 at practice. Well, what does that mean for the defense? I mean, what were they?
Also, 7-on-7 is without an offensive line or defensive line. There's literally no pass rush.
Yeah.
So, like, let's put things into the proper.
But let's get excited anyway. Yeah, let's get excited. Yeah. Let's go off the rails, right? Let's get excited. And then, of course, we have RG3 complaining that Tua is not a higher paid quarterback. I mean, I love that. You know, I mean, just seriously, like RG3, like, okay, what was the last contract you've ever done in your life? Like, do you even understand the market? And let's just be clear. All these contracts we're about to talk about, Jordan Love, Matthew Stafford, and of course Tua, we don't really know what the real deals are. I mean, we know that the first line of information that we get is propaganda from the agent. Until we peel back the layers, we really don't know. So, you know, I know RG3 has done his share of enormous amounts of contracts and have handicapped 1,000 things in his life. But, you know, you just might want to stop. I mean, if you're an expert in football, you realize that the team around Tua has a lot to do with his success.
Yeah, I mean, it's move over Drew Rosenhaus, move over David Mulugeta. All these agents, get out of here. RG3 is going to go ahead and broker some of these deals for these players. I mean, that's just incredible
or
stuff.
Or Danny Oken. Danny Oken, he's going to do it too. Yeah, he, you know. Because Danny Oken just told me the other day that all the Jets have to do is score 17 points to win every game. I just thought that was brilliant analysis. I don't know where you come up with it, but it's brilliant. It's unbelievable. Just score 17, Jets. That's all you got to do.
We don't have to get into our guy today. Maybe we're all in training camp form going on, but yeah, that's utterly
ridiculous.
We'll
get him on the pod on Monday. I promise you, we're going to get his ass on the pod on Monday. I can tell you that.
That's a good tease. Tune in for that one. The GM Shuffle. Get it wherever you get your podcast. New episode dropping tomorrow morning into your feeds. Let's set the table before we get into the contracts. Let's set the table for what we do have over these next couple of hours. 30 minutes from now, Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, host of VSiN Primetime. JVT's also been diving deep into the Olympic basketball. Team USA will make their Olympic debut later on this morning, West Coast time, as late morning on the East Coast. They'll be taking on Serbia and Nikola Jokic. That should be a fun game. We'll get JVT's thoughts on the market and also some of his takeaways from day one of the Olympic basketball action that we saw yesterday. Then 45 minutes from now, it's our old buddy Brian Broaddus, bucket of 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, former NFL scout. He is in Oxnard for Dallas Cowboys training camp. We'll get Broaddus' thoughts on the CeeDee Lamb holdout, where things stand with Dak Prescott, and also what does this offensive line look like? Because I've seen some projected offensive lines that are projected to be starting there, and it's a little shaky for my Dallas Cowboys. We'll ask Broaddus about that 45 minutes from now. Then in hour number two, we'll get caught up with what's happening at San Francisco 49ers training camp. Rob Guerra of the Gold Standard 49ers Podcast Network will join us to break down the contract issues in San Francisco. Ayuk holding in, Williams holding out. We'll get Rob's thoughts on all of it. But, Mike, let's get to those contracts that we saw from the quarterbacks Friday afternoon. And it started off with Tua Tagovailoa. Stormy and I were doing the Lombardi Line on Friday. 10 minutes after we got done, the notification started flowing in. Tua signing a 4-year extension, $212.4 million. The new money average, $53.1 million, as Tua is now the man in Miami as he gets that extension.
Why doesn't the old money count? I mean, why doesn't that money ever count? You know, because I think what's the 5-year deal with the old money is 47-1, which is probably the right number. You know, but why doesn't the old money ever count? I never understood that. I think to me, $93 million fully guaranteed at signing. And then what the key word here is practical guarantee, right? And so that means they're going to pay as they go, which is critical. Because, look, if he gets a concussion and it's skill and injury guaranteed, he's going to get paid. So this is the fine line you've got to go through. If Tua gets another concussion and he has to retire, God forbid, don't want that to happen to anybody. But then all of a sudden that injury money has to come in. So I think ultimately we have to look at this contract, the language. And so I think, you know, I think what you have to do is really break it down. But again, the old money counts. Like, nobody wants to recognize that in the media, but it does. And that's where I think the sticking point is on CeeDee Lamb moving forward is, would, and people have said this, is over the guarantee and what is the real number.
Yeah. Well, the new money, that's obviously coming from the agents that are sending out those texts to all the insiders to go ahead and report that news. So it's kind of one of those copy-paste situations, for lack of a better phrase, that the insiders go ahead and get from the agents. But yes, the contract, $93.1 million, fully guaranteed at signing. You mentioned the practical guarantees. But it's kind of like a three-year commitment for Tua Tagovailoa with only $3 million in guarantees that would linger into 2027. I guess if you're Miami, is this how you would have structured the deal? Would you have gone down this road, or would you maybe have looked for another alternative, which, yeah, it's easy to say, much harder to do?
Yeah, I mean, look, their window is right now. I mean, Tyreek Hill's over 30, so they've got to get this close. They've got to try to make their run as best they can. I think clearly, you know, the three-year deal tells us that they want to be able to see if he can stay healthy for 3 years and then enter down that road. I think that's going to be the key area of this, is health is important for Tua. And they understand Tua. I think, to me, the deal that we'll see when the deal comes in, but I think it was a good deal for Tua to take, because I don't think Tua wanted to play a season without that deal in place, without at least some of those future guarantees that are going to kick in. So it's good for both parties. I mean, look, it's easy to say Tua's not an elite player, which I think that's correct. I think Tua's a good player, but I wouldn't say Tua's a top five player in the league. He has top five numbers, but he's not a top five player. He can't win on the road in cold weather. He hasn't been able. They're 4-10 down the stretch. Now, 1 year he didn't play, but last year he did. And of the 14 games with Mike McDaniel, they're 4-10 down the stretch. So, and when they play good defenses, they struggle. That's fair. I mean, just look at the numbers. So I think, to me, it was the right deal for Tua to take, and it was the right deal for him to for the Miami Dolphins to take. Now, will they get a quarterback in the future? Perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, Tua led the league in passing last year, 4,600 passing yards. We'll see if he can duplicate that this season. Then the offense is going to be really good, at least I think it will be. We'll see if they can actually sustain that, though. I mentioned November, December is where those Mike McDaniel teams have definitely struggled. And this is a team that if they want to go to the Super Bowl, they probably need to be the one seed. Because, like you mentioned, Tua is not really playing well in inclement weather, which if you look at all of the AFC contenders, whether it's Kansas City or Baltimore or Cincinnati or Buffalo, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, like, all these teams play in bad weather in January when the playoffs take place. So if you're the Dolphins, you want to go ahead and get that home field advantage, or at least be a two seed to where you can play multiple home games in the playoffs, because it's not happening if you gotta go on the road.
But I think clearly what Miami's intent was during this contract was they were not going to be overly guaranteed in the contract. So the $91.3 million guarantee ranks 12th among the contracts, and it's sub 40% of the total value of the contract, which is less than all the quarterbacks in recent times. So I think you've got to understand that. I mean, that puts things in perspective in terms of how this deal was done and why it was done.
Jordan Love with the Green Bay Packers ended up signing a few hours after Tua Tagovailoa, his 2020 draft class mate, 4-year, $220 million contract extension. But when you factor in the old money with the existing base salary, it ends up becoming a 5-year, $230.5 million deal, $46 million per year. This is off of one season of production. And that's something that you've talked about, saying, hey, the Packers have a lot more faith in this than I do, even though the second half of the season looked really, really good for Jordan Love, 32 touchdown passes in total. It's still 1 year of production, and now he's one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was going to be a 10-year contract. I thought this was going to be really much longer than it ended up being. And it only goes to 2028, which he'll be 30 years old. But and it has a potential out after 3 years, which is shocking to me, Femi. I didn't think so. I thought it would be, you know, a different kind of deal. $108 million guaranteed at signing bonus. That's because the 24 salary and the 25, $10.4 million of that is fully guaranteed upon signing the deal. And then he has fifth day of the league year guaranteed contract that comes forward. So none of this is Deshaun Watson buttoned up. None of it is like that. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays. I mean, 3 years at 28 years old, he could potentially opt out of the deal and go from there. So he's got option bonuses set forward. He's got Pro Bowl escalators set forward. And he's got, you know, Pro Bowl incentives that go into the contract. So, look, for me, here's the question I would ask you. If Jordan Love played really good for the first eight games and not as well for the last nine, where would we be right now?
I don't think we'd be with this contract. Like, I don't think
me either.
It's like we're talking about a franchise tag or let's just play out this this final year and see what he ends up doing. Order of operation matters. It's the last thing we saw was Jordan Love playing really well. Real quick before we had to break, why did you think that this was going to be like a 10-year deal? Because we've seen Mahomes sign that deal in years past. Why did you think that was going to be the case here?
I thought it was because, you know, they could extend him out to 2031 where he would have been 33 years old, get a long term, because we kept hearing he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. And I felt like if you're going to get that number, it's going to be over years. Remember, contracts are about time and money. How many years, how much money? And I thought since we were hearing it was going to be the best contract in the league, but obviously he took the shorter deal.
Yeah, his agent maybe wanted him to get a chance to double dip at age 30. We'll talk about this more on the other side. Just getting started here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions, pro, as in become a VSiN Pro subscriber and get an all-access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2024 College Football Betting Guide. Thursday's release of the College Football Guide and our previously released NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this season. The only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber, and you can do exactly that at VSiN.com/subscribe. We encourage everyone to do that. This is that time of the year. I know vacations are starting to wrap up. If you're traveling, download the PDF of the guide, read that on the flight, make sure you're ready to roll. So if football season comes around, you're not playing catch up. This is the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, will join us 15 minutes from now as we break down Team USA's opening game in the Olympics as they take on Nikola Jokic and Serbia later on. The USA right now a 13.5 or 14-point favorite with a total 83.5 last JVT, if there's any value there. But let's get back to some of these NFL contracts, Michael. We're breaking down Tua signing the deal with the Dolphins, Jordan Love signing the deal with the Green Bay Packers. And as we were heading to break, you were talking about the years and how like contracts are about timing as well as the money. Why do you think that these deals are four-year extensions where some of their 2020 draft classmates like Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts, those guys got the five-year extensions?
Well, I think a lot of that is because they know who Burrow is. They know who Herbert is. I think there is a little bit of a doubt on Tua's health. Can Love do it? I mean, look, you don't want to get trapped like Cleveland's trapped right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in cap hell. If Deshaun Watson doesn't play like he did the second half of the Baltimore game, which he hasn't played in his career in since the contract, right? I mean, when you break him down, it's horrible. And the cap number is enormous. It's the same thing that's going on with Derek Carr down in New Orleans. I mean, They went ahead and guaranteed his paragraph five this year, which now they can't move off of him. So I think when you trap yourself, the Cowboys are trapped by the quarterback. When you get trapped by the quarterback with no chance of relief, it becomes a real issue. And if Deshaun Watson, he's averaged 6.5 yards per attempt. You know, he's got 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions in the 12 games that he's played. I mean, this isn't worth $65 million, is it?
No, No, I think there's some buyer's remorse there from Cleveland, whether they admit it or not. Like, there's definitely there's no way they would do that contract if they had a chance to redo it, especially what they saw last year when they, with five different quarterbacks, were still able to win 11 games. It's not like Watson was playing any better than Flacco or any better than PJ Walker or any of those guys. Like, he looked just like they did, if not worse at times. So I think for Cleveland, definitely having the buyer's remorse. But it is interesting, though, because we talked about in the draft process, the 2021 class, much maligned now because only Trevor Lawrence signed a second deal with the team that drafted him, whether it was Mac Jones, Fields, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, all those guys on different teams. This 2020 class, I mean, this is, I don't know where it ranks in terms of NFL draft history or whatever. It's like not the top, obviously 83 or 84. Like, that's like the kind of the creme de la creme right there. But this is pretty good here. Like, all of these teams have really solid quarterbacks. And these are the young guys who are going to kind of be the next class of good quarterbacks in the NFL that we have for the next decade or so.
Well, I mean, look, Tua, I think the surrounding cast really helps Tua tremendously, not taking anything away from him. And then, of course, Jordan Love, we saw that he started the season off where they were protecting him, where he came on. But are we sure we're going to get a full season out of Love? I mean, he lost in Green, he lost it to the New York Football Giants when he got a lot of pressure in that game. Remember, this is the third best offensive line in football in terms of pass protection. So, obviously, Jalen Hurts wasn't the same quarterback he was 2 years ago last year. We'll see how that works out. Although his percentage of completion in practice for the Eagles is remarkable. I mean, we is 7-on-7. He hasn't dropped and always dropped the ball, so I'm sure he's going to be great. I think more than anything, Femi, this draft class teaches us that you have to surround the players with the right cast of characters. Mm. Like, Noah, yes, they're going to make $50 million, and don't begrudge them for making it. That's the market. As Tua said, the market is the market. But you have to understand who the quarterback is and what he brings to the table and how do we enhance those skills. That's the key to football. What's Brock Purdy going to get? Like, somebody's trying to tell me Brock Purdy's not better than Tua. You're crazy. Just watch the tape. He is. He's much better, you know, and I think to me, he's going to get a huge contract when it comes his time. I know he was the Mr. Irrelevant, and that seems to make him seem like he's not a good player, but he is. You watch his throws, you watch his tape, what he's able to do. Yes, he has good players around him, but he highlights those players.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, he's going to be in that $60+ million range for sure, based on where these contracts are trending, which leads me to the quarterback of my favorite team, Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. This has been a contract negotiation that's been at least discussed maybe more than there's actually been a negotiation between Dak and the Cowboys. Earlier this week at training camp, as of course Cowboys arrived in Oxnard, Dak was asked about his contract and where things stand and if he's sort of worried about what might happen at the end of this season.
I'm going to say, I want to be here, but you know, when you look up, all the great quarterbacks I watched played for other teams. So my point in saying that is, That's not something to fear. That may be a reality for me one day, may not be my decision. So that's the freedom that I have is be where your feet are, make the most of it, be confident in yourself, make your team better. I love my teammates. I love that locker room. I love everything about being out here in Oxnard and being a Dallas Cowboy.
So, Michael, Jerry Jones earlier at his State of the Union press conference to start off training camp said that he doesn't believe this will be the final year for Dak Prescott in a Dallas Cowboys uniform. But when you hear Dak, how do you interpret what he had to say?
See, every time I listen to anything about the Cowboys, I hearken back to a line that Bill Parcells told me one day on the telephone when we were talking. He said, Jerry Jones can talk a cat off the top of a fish truck. And so... look, Parcells doesn't throw compliments around very often, okay? Mm-hmm. So for him to say that, there's some teeth to that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think to me, Jerry just feels like he'll talk his way. Look, one thing about quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks, like, do you really think he's going to leave the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys to go become the starting quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders for the same money? Of course not. I mean, Jerry knows that, yes, he could become a free agent, but free agent quarterbacks, why would they want to change their environment? Why would they want to leave, right? Mm-hmm. Why would they want to go anywhere else? I think to me, there lies the rub. And I think Jerry feels like I'll sign Dak. It may cost me $8 million more. Jerry has never been proactive in signing players. Philadelphia signs players earlier. Jerry waits to the end. And I think it costs him money. I think it's a poor tactic.
And that's the point that I want to hammer home here, because like we were always headed down this road when Dak Prescott signed the last contract, because that's important to know. Like after the 2020 season, when he had the ankle injury and he missed like what 10 games or 11 games or whatever it was, he then signed the contract after that offseason. And that was when it came the no tag clause, the no trade clause, where if you're giving a player that kind of leverage, they're always going to just play this out, especially when they're the quarterback of the team. Like this is, we were always headed this direction, despite maybe like the fans being like, hey, like get Dak signed, get Dak signed. I tweeted this out earlier. Dak has no incentive to sign right now. Just go out and play this thing out and then sign in March, whether it's to stay with the Cowboys or to go to another team. Like just play the whole thing out.
He does have a little one, Femi, because if he, you know, injuries do play. And look, everybody says, well, just get insurance.
He got hurt last time.
None of these people go and get insurance. Nobody's looked at the prices of insurance, right? What it costs to insure somebody of Dak's value, right? That's a hefty premium. I can promise you that. Mm-hmm. So he does have some incentive, but, you know, yes, you're right. He got hurt the last time, but now he's older. You know, there's a little bit. It's like when, you know, as you get older, you don't have this problem. I do. You know, I tell my investment guy, like, I'm too old for you to take chances. Like, just hit the ball down the middle of the fairway, you know. Don't get the driver out. Just take the 3-iron and hit it down the fairway. We'll be good. You know, when you get older, you don't want to take as many chances. You only have so many more contracts to get to as you get older. You know, you got the world ahead of you. So I think to me, Dak's got to understand that as well.
Yeah, well, Dak is younger than me, so maybe he has even more world ahead of him than I do. Do you think that, like, let's say that they play this thing out and Dak is now an unrestricted free agent on March 11th, whenever the hell the new league year begins for the 2025 season, do you think he could get anything close to a buttoned up Deshaun Watson type of deal?
Yeah, I think he could. Yeah, I think he definitely could.
Yeah,
I mean, Jerry, look, I don't get it. And we'll talk to Brian Broaddus later in the show, but I don't get any sense that there's play that they don't see a world where Dak isn't the quarterback. There's so many other things going on down there that I think they want to resolve. And obviously they want CeeDee Lamb. But again, like we talked about on the podcast, you've got to model this. You got to see, what is it going to cost me if we sign Lamb? The fans want Lamb signed. Lamb wants his money. But if we sign Lamb, we sign Parsons, we sign Prescott, where are we? Mm-hmm. Where are we? Like, you know, where are we? We can't just have everything.
Yeah. And I guess my thing is that, like, it's hard to do these other deals, whether it's Lamb or Parsons, without knowing what the Dak deal is going to look like. Like, it almost feels like they're in a little bit of a holding pattern here. I'm sure maybe they're going to get Lamb done at some point, or he's going to come back to camp because he's not going to miss games. But, like, how do you operate with the Dak thing looming and not knowing exactly what that number is? Hard to model it if you don't know what that is, unless you start to model it life without Dak Prescott, which I don't think the Cowboys actually want to do. JVT joins us next to break down the Olympics here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It's the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi hanging out here on a Sunday. And we'll get right to it as we preview the United States men's basketball Olympic debut as they take on Serbia. We're bringing in our guy, VSiN, senior NBA analyst and co-host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern time. Jonathan Von Tobel joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. JVT, good morning. Thanks for waking up with us. Before we get into today's game, USA and Serbia, any betting takeaways or otherwise from what we saw day one of Olympic basketball yesterday?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things, and you know, I was asked this yesterday from the Live Bet Saturday crew, or the, you know, I'm sorry, but whatever show we call that, I can't remember. But you know, we were talking about like the takeaways from these contests, right? And for me, there was two. The first of which is, I don't think we should sleep on Germany. I get Japan is going to be one of the lower power rated teams in this tournament, but the Germans are a team that have played together for a while. Femi, this is the same team that went and won FIBA World Cup gold last summer, and there are some very good basketball players that we are familiar with here in the States that play in the NBA. It is a very solid squad. And in a setting like this, where a good chunk of these teams are getting thrown together, and maybe some of them have played for some seasons, right? Canada has some guys that have played together, played in the FIBA World Cup last summer, France, same thing. But for the most part, you know, you want to build that continuity. This German team has that, and they've reached really small, really great heights with this team. So I don't think we should forget how competitive this German team can be. And at some of these other spots when they match up with some of the big boys, when they move on to the group stage, or excuse me, to the quarterfinals, the knockouts, which I think they will do, I don't think we should be forgotten how good this team can be. I think the other is, as we looked at some of these, look, France has some real problems. And I think from a guard standpoint, they have a really lack of explosiveness. They don't have guys who can get north-south. They don't have guys who shot create. We know they have Victor Wembanyama. They know they have Rudy Gobert. They didn't shoot the ball particularly well yesterday. They should be better at that. But the guard play is pretty weak. And I think France, as somebody who has a gold ticket on them, I'm very worried because I think it's going to be short-lived if they get and when they get to the knockout stage, because they should. They were minus 225 to win this group before it started. Should be able to move on in the weak group. But once you get to the big boys, I think it's going to be pretty troublesome for the Les Bleus.
Let me ask you, what do you think the best – I know everybody's wondering whether Mr. Embiid is going to face Jokic today, which we know that unless it's in Philly, that doesn't happen. But what is your best starting five, or what do you think closes the game for Steve Kerr when he needs to close the game out?
Well, and so this is interesting. From a
personnel standpoint.
Right, Michael, because now that Kevin Durant is healthy, this kind of throws the fly in the ointment, which is like, hey, now we have KD available to us. So who are you going to use to close out these games? I think what you're using is pretty much your starting five, and I know we're joking about him, but I think you're replacing Joel Embiid with Anthony Davis. I think what you've seen from these friendlies is that Anthony Davis, like, the ball does not stop with him offensively, right? That is a big thing. He is a guy that can facilitate, can move the ball around. He can finish. He can roll. He's a lob threat. He can do all sorts of things while playing some pretty dynamic defense. You know, with Joel Embiid, you've got to play that drop coverage style of defense. With Anthony Davis, yeah, you can play that, but also if he's forced to, he can switch out on the perimeter. You can feel comfortable with him guarding out in space against some of the guards that they're going to face. And I think in terms of closing some of these games out, that's what you need defensively. You need a little bit more fluidity. You need some variety with the way that you can attack teams defensively. And with Joel Embiid, at least, when you're attacking the center for Team USA when he's on the floor, you know what you get. You're going to get drop coverage. But with Anthony Davis, it could be a mixture of things. And I think that's why when you're closing out some of these tight games, Davis, for me, would be in the closing lineup. And then we'll see what they do with Kevin Durant, because Durant's expected to come off of the bench today. If he's going to be healthy, I think you can argue he should be in that start, that closing lineup with LeBron and with Steph. But I do think that Anthony Davis is probably like the big piece that I would say is the switch that you make, especially with Joel Embiid being the starter at five.
We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, as well as VSiN co-host of VSiN Primetime. Check out all of his work at VSiN.com as well as he hangs out with us on the Progressive Guest Line. Now, I've heard a lot of the discussion about this team, and we've seen the friendlies, the South Sudan scare, a competitive exhibition game against Germany. Is it true that LeBron is our best player? And if that's the case, is that really a good thing at his age of, what, 40 years old? Like what's going on with this team?
Well, okay, here's the thing. I think we should stop. LeBron's LeBron, right? Like, yeah, what if he is our best player? Like, he's freaking awesome. He's by some, like, at worst, the second best player of all time, right? Like, I don't think it's funny how, because we get so wrapped up in this, right? Because it is Team USA. And despite the fact that a Canadian man made this sport, we should dominate this thing, right? Like there are all these thoughts about how we should feel about this team in the world setting, Femi. But at the same time, so then we have these like other thoughts. Like, I don't know if the second best player of all time should be our best guy. Like, what if he is? He's awesome. But I think it just speaks to, look, I don't know who the best player is. But I think that when you've watched these friendlies, Femi, you have seen different guys step up at different times. And I think that gives you the effectiveness of how good this team can be, right? Hey, scoring drought, here comes Steph making multiple threes. Hey, are we got off to a slow start against Canada? I think you were in the building for that one, Femi. Okay, let's go to our bench where Anthony Edwards all of a sudden takes over and lets us get back into this thing and takes a lead. Anthony Davis as well, right? Like, throughout these entire friendlies, we've seen different guys step up at different times. And then, of course, LeBron has the big moments in the clutch down the stretch to really help them in these friendlies. But if he is, I would say, so what? He's awesome. He has shown no signs of decline. He clearly is the best player on the floor at times. I mean, I think, was it South Sudan when he just calls a small guy over and he goes, let's go, kid, and he just bullies him to the rim to get to the bucket. I still think that you're in a pretty good place if LeBron James is your best player on the floor.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, who does it matter who is our best player? As long as we win a gold medal, I don't think it really matters at all. Let's shift to the NBA a little bit. You know, now that free agency, the draft, all that's over with, is there one team that you've broken down and said, wait a minute, they're a little bit better than I thought they were?
You know, I don't know if it's better than I thought they were, but I do think they're getting left in the noise of everything happening, Michael. You look, and I think I've talked to this about with Femi before. There is a team that is out there that has finished as a top three seed in multiple years in the NBA in the Western Conference that is not really getting that much conversation because of the moves that have been made. Memphis is going to be healthy again. And I think people need to realize how good the Memphis Grizzlies can be on both sides of the ball if they're going to be fully healthy. Last year was not a year in which this thing failed. It was a year in which nobody played, right? Ja Morant got hurt. Marcus Smart got hurt. Desmond Bane got hurt. Brandon Clark didn't make his debut until late in the season because he was coming off an Achilles. Like, this is a team when fully constructed, we saw win multiple top three seeds in the Western Conference. So I think out of all of these teams, Michael, what's kind of been left in the dust is a team we just haven't seen for over a year, which is the Memphis Grizzlies. But that is a team that could be one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, that has one of the most electric offensive players in the association in Ja Morant. And it was forgotten. It was funny. I was watching a lot coming out of Memphis of, we need to fire Taylor Jenkins. No, he is one of the best head coaches in the NBA. And so I think when you look at what Memphis can be, I think what's being forgotten in the Mavericks run and the additions that the Thunder made and how, you know, we believe in the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets is that the Memphis Grizzlies are a team that I think should be rated better than their contemporaries in that price range, you know, Lakers, Suns, Pelicans. I think that's a team that's kind of being forgotten.
Yeah, Memphis right now 15-1 to win the Western Conference over at DraftKings. I do want to ask you about side and total for USA Serbia later on today, but sure. Real quick, is it a matter of when and not if Lauri Markkanen gets traded to the Golden State Warriors?
It sounds like it is, you know, and we know that Danny Ainge kind of has this thing, right, Femi, where he likes to hold on to his assets and try to get like the best deal possible. But I do think that by the time we get closer, look, we see this all the time, right? We saw this with Damian Lillard that dragged out for a while. Kevin Durant dragged out for a while when there is not really there's nothing going on right now. You don't really need to make this deal at this point. Mm-hmm. There is a deadline coming up with his contract, right? There's something going on where if he's not flipped by a certain time and it comes with an extension, we'll kind of know. But I think we'll probably get this relatively soon if he is going to get dealt. But I do think that I would say it's a small favorite that he goes.
Yeah. All right. So let's go today. I mean, are you laying the points? What are you doing today?
Yeah, I think the market's getting this right. And like, it's actually funny. We've seen this kind of bounce back and forth, right? We've got this as low as 12.5, Michael, and 12. We're starting to buy back up to 14. You're starting to see a little bit of resistance at 14. So we're probably going to close at about 13.5. But for me, the side would be Team USA or nothing. We saw the friendly between these two. There was a gap in play between these two teams. Team USA is a great defensive team that I think can take advantage of a Serbian squad that has really great strength at the wing with Bogdan Bogdanovic, and of course, Nikola Jokic. But guard play overall, especially at the point of attack, I don't think is really that great. You're going to be able to, I think, muck things up and hold this team down like you did when you played them in the friendly. That was a double-digit victory for them. It was well past double digits. And it was a game in which you held them to a defensive or an offensive rating of about 70. I think it was like 77, somewhere around there. That's 0.7 points per possession. You should be able to defend this team at a very high level. So I think the market's getting this right and saying, all right, like 12.5. And we probably saw that bump because Kevin Durant is going to come off the bench today. And maybe the resistance is the question about Embiid. But as we talked about, I think Anthony Davis slotting in there like, oh, darn, we've got to replace Joel Embiid with Anthony Davis. Like, I think you're going to be fine. And I don't think that's really worth a point move. So for me, it would be Team USA.
Yes, an embarrassment of riches for the Stars and Stripes. Circa went down to 13. So if you're looking to lay it with the Team USA, Circa is your sportsbook to go ahead and do that. The total sitting at 184.5. He is Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, now our Olympic basketball analyst for the next couple of weeks with the games going on over in Paris. JVT, good luck with the bets, man. Thanks as always.
Much like the Olympians, I will answer any call. I'm here for our country, you know?
He's going to be in like the Stars and Stripes banner. And the next time we bring him on here, JVT joining us, of course, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Michael, this game's going to tip off while we're on the air. So maybe we'll give some live updates happening. Yep. It's 11:15 Eastern, 8:15 West Coast time to give us some basketball. But on the other side, we'll turn our attention back to the football. Brian Broaddus of 105 Through the Fan down in Dallas will join us from Cowboys training camp in Oxnard, I should say, next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning off with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, the headline, Jet Fuel Our guy, JVT, wrote up about the New York Jets and how he shares in some of the optimism about gangrene going over that win total of 9.5. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel, who joined us in the last segment, breaking down Olympic basketball ahead of USA's game against Serbia. But to go back to the gridiron, we're bringing in our old friend, Brian Broaddus of 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, former NFL scout, and he is boots on the ground in Oxnard for Dallas Cowboys training camp. And he joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Broaddus, before we get into some of the what you've seen the first few days at training camp, I wanted to ask you about Dak Prescott and this whole contract situation. Am I crazy to think that Dak would be nuts to sign something prior to becoming an unrestricted free agent this March?
Yeah, that seems to be the thought going through camp right now. We had a chance to visit with Jerry Jones. They had their opening ceremonies here. You know, we've been practicing a few days, but Saturday is traditionally the day where they open the ceremonies. And you know, Jerry was talking about, you know, he understanding the cap, where it's going to be in the future. You know, there was a lot going on with Jerry in his mind about that. And he was saying, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing Dak Prescott, you know, perform very well this year. And, you know, the question was asked, what could he do without a contract? And Jerry said, yeah, sure. Absolutely. He can. So, you know, it's an interesting dynamic that we live in here with the Dallas Cowboys, just because you get the feeling at times, do they really believe that Dak Prescott is their quarterback? I know working with DallasCowboys.com for a lot of years, being in the building there at the Star Valley Ranch, you know, I used to hear the whispers, you know, from the Monday meetings, is this really our guy? Is this really our quarterback? You know, and so when you get to a point in time where we are right now, you know, and with the number where it is, you start to wonder. Now, Stephen Jones came out yesterday and he said that that there have been some meaningful conversations between Todd France and himself, Stephen, and, you know, that maybe they can, you know, that they were positive. We'll see how that all plays out. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, we're all wondering why would he sign? You know, why would he sign? Because I feel like he's in a pretty good situation right now, you know, with and you know, with maybe, if the Cowboys are balking on paying him, you know, that maybe there's a team out there that would. And so that's kind of what we're working through right now.
Brian, as you watch the Cowboys, I mean, that's the key question. You've seen Trey Lance practice recently.
Sure.
I mean, what is the enthusiasm? What's your evaluation? You've done this for a living. What's your evaluation of Trey Lance? And could he be the guy that they think could be the guy?
Well, the thing about Trey Lance, Michael, is they had a grade of a 120, which is the top of the second round on their board when Trey came out. So Jerry made the determination, let's try and get ahead of the quarterback game here. And instead of drafting a quarterback, let's just go ahead and trade, you know, to, you know, give John Lynch a call and, you know, get Trey Lance. So they had a nice solid grade on Trey Lance. They spent the whole year with him last year. It took a little bit of a role. What you guys used to do in Cleveland, Michael, with Coach Belichick is, you know, you had your coaches working with him at practice, after practice. You know, he had a practice after the practice, I guess is what I'm trying to say there. So, you know, they were trying to figure out ways to get him more work. They just couldn't get it on the field, you know, with game situations. But yeah, with Trey so far, the first two practices, they've been doing a lot of the 7-on-7, which is no offensive and defensive line. It's take a snap, it's drop back, it's try to find a receiver. And, you know, Trey, for that part, the OTAs, mini camps, he looked indecisive. And it was taking him a little bit more time to get through the read and get to where he needed with the ball. These last couple of days, he's been better, but the ball has been more of a check down situation, more of a, okay, and, you know, coaches always say, oh, take what you get, you know, take what you get, you know, take what you can get. And, you know, Trey's taken that to like a whole new level right now. And there was Cooper Rush is like thinking, okay, well, listen, I got nothing to lose here. He's throwing the ball down the field. He's trying to hit deep outs. He's trying to hit comebacks. He's trying to hit vertical seam routes. You know, he's just throwing the ball, as is Dak Prescott. So it looks like to me that, you know, finally we saw with Trey, a little bit more of a willingness to some of the in-breaking routes a little bit better down the field. His accuracy at times has been very, very good. And at other times, you know, he's missed some throws, but it's hard to miss throws when it's, you know, near the line of scrimmage or over the center box. You know, that's kind of where he's been throwing the ball. And it's, you know, he's just saying, okay, I'll just live to fight another day, kind of waiting for him to open it up more and try and complete more passes down the field, like we've seen from Dak and Rush.
Oh, Trey Lance being indecisive. Where have we heard that before? It almost sounds like part three of what we've heard from 49ers camp from years past. We're hanging out with Brian Broaddus, host at 105 Through the Fan down in Dallas, former NFL scout here. Well, Broaddus, what about the likelihood of CeeDee Lamb getting to camp and getting a deal done? Where do you put that at right now as CeeDee Lamb is currently holding out of training camp?
Yeah, they've actually the two receivers that are, you know, playing behind him, or there's actually three receivers, have actually had a good start to camp. You know, I know Cowboy fans out there would, you know, ask me a question about Jalen Tolbert and what he's been able to do. And then also, though, when you look at Jalen Brooks, you know, kind of competing behind Cooks, you know, for that third, fourth spot as receivers, the receivers are off to a pretty good start. But the thing with CeeDee Lamb is, you know, Jerry talks about wanting to see more leaves fall off the tree. Well, you know, we've seen these wide receivers, you know, get extended, and we've seen, these teams make offers, get deals done. Now everybody's kind of going, okay, well, what more do you need to see? And where do you see CeeDee Lamb among these wide receivers? Is he the, you know, second best, third best, fourth best? Where do you see him? So again, Stephen Jones was talking to us and saying, we've had discussions, you know, with CeeDee's guy. That one seems like, to me, it's a more of a priority just because of the situation of him not being here at camp, him being on the rookie deal, stuff like that. They would like to get that done if they could. But again, it's going to be about the Cowboys determining where he comes in. I know you guys follow the cap really, really well. I know you guys have access to numbers. You know, that number that Jefferson got in Minnesota, that is a legitimate number at $35 million. Sometimes you can get numbers and they're not legitimate. Well, I had cap guys tell me that's a legitimate number. So I guess that's where you start. And, you know, it's up to Stephen Jones to try and figure that out right now. But he feels like they've had some good talks. You know, we've heard that before. The thought is that maybe this will get done this week. Again, that's just from the news that we're hearing. And, you know, at camp, just coming from their side, waiting to hear from the other side if they really are actually that close.
Brian, as you watch this team in practice, what does the offensive line configuration look like?
Yeah, yesterday was the first day, Michael, and they had a what they call a mock game. And mock game is a glorified walkthrough. I saw some bucket hats I really would love to wear at some point in time on the players, yeah. You know. And so I was more interested in the bucket hats than I were the walkthrough. But no, where they're going right now, this is the first practice where Tyler Guyton, the rookie left tackle out of Oklahoma, was running with the ones. This was the first time that he had done that. He and Cooper Beebe, the center, both were drafted to fill spots. But right now, Chuma Adoga has been the left tackle. But yesterday, it was Tyler Guyton. Kind of waiting to hear word this morning. There's a rumor that they might go. They're going into pads the beginning of next week. That we might get shoulder pads today and a little bit more competitive practice. But Guyton was the starter at left tackle next to Tyler Smith. Brock Hoffman continues to run at center. Zach Martin at the right guard. And then Terrence Steele at the right tackle. That's how their offensive line was configured yesterday as we walked off that practice field.
Real quick, Broaddus, we got about 40 seconds left. What is this defense going to look like? Dan Quinn now in Washington, Mike Zimmer back as a Dallas defensive coordinator after many years of being a head coach.
Yeah, I tell you what, Zim's done a really nice job. He's incorporated all his rookie players very quickly. Luafau, Nealon. I mean, he's getting guys involved, and he's got some guys Overshown. Last year hurt his knee, was having a really good camp, would have likely made the team and helped. He's incorporating all his guys. He's trying to find ways to move his defensive front around and incorporate Micah Parsons at some different spots. Mike had been playing a little bit more off ball linebacker, kind of working on that element of the game early in camp. Talking to Zim, he says, listen, I've got to create ways to create mismatches for him. That's my number one goal this year.
It's move around.
Good job, Brian. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Awesome stuff. That is Brian Broaddus of 105.3, the Fan, former NFL scout. He joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. On the other side, we begin hour number two with what's on Michael's mind next here on the Lombardi Line.